You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The open oceans are a violent and lawless place, an area of the globe where human trafficking, illegal fishing operations, and deplorable murders are often frequent. The Outlaw Ocean series is a 7-part exploration into the stories of those who are coerced with the promise of better employment out of their villages into a life of slavery, brutal working conditions, and all too often ends in death. I spoke with the author of the Outlaw Ocean series, New York Times investigative journalist Ian Urbina, about his troubling reports of crime and violence in international waters. To start, I asked him what the series encompasses and how the project started.
So the Outlaw Ocean is a series about lawlessness at sea, and it's ongoing and started reporting about 2 years ago, and essentially an exploration of the diversity of crime that occurs offshore, and that includes everything from sea slavery to intentional dumping to murder caught on camera to abuse of stowaways to human trafficking, arms dealing, and assorted other crimes.
So generally, how long did this process take you of reporting on these events? How long were you out actually investigating?
So the conversation sort of that launched it all began in late 2014, and reporting occurred throughout 2015 into 2016, and then we put it down for a little while, and now we are picking it back up. And actually, I just flew in yesterday from Somalia, offshore Somalia, reporting more stories. And, you know, it took us to the first round, took us to 15 countries and 5 seas. And this year, the second stage of reporting have already, you know, gone to about 10 other countries, and we'll continue doing so, most of the time going to countries and then going offshore and spending time on various vessels.
So obviously you would have to have spent quite a bit of time off land. What did you guys discover some of the main problems with actually getting out and investigating these issues? Because I'd imagine it'd be quite hard to get from port out into the middle of the ocean with a bunch of people who I'd imagine wouldn't really want Western reporters snooping around.
Yeah, quite right. I mean, the logistics are perhaps one of the most difficult issues, only closely followed by just what you said, you know, the lack of interest to have you there. The difficulty varied. Sometimes the challenge is not just getting out there, but you've got to get out there to a specific spot at a specific time to get picked up by someone else. And those are really tough because things don't follow a schedule at sea. And so rendezvous are tough, and sometimes they're required to get on the right vessel. And so, for example, one story we wrote, which was about a chase of, you know, unfolded from Antarctica. It ran from Antarctica up to Africa, and two vessels were chasing the world's most wanted, Interpol wanted vessel. And I had heard about that and been tipped off by someone, and we had a very specific tight schedule if we were going to get on board for that chase. They couldn't peel off and pick us up, so we had to go out and meet them en route. And those are really tough. You got it. Usually you have to hopscotch in any of these stories. So you find someone who's willing to take you out a certain amount of distance and then put you on another vessel. And then they take you out further and put you on another and so and so. And those logistical plays are tough. I'd say the toughest, though, by far, was the South China Sea, the reporting we did about sea slavery and forced labor on Thai vessels. And there's a specific subset of vessels. They're the transshipment vessels. They're the ones that stay out at sea and they fish continually, sometimes for years. And then they offload the ship by transshipment onto other vessels that bring it back to shore, but they keep fishing. And we were trying to get out to those fishing vessels because we had heard that they're the ones that have the worst kind of sea slavery problem. And they tend to be 150 miles offshore. And like you said, their captains, you know, are not thrilled with the notion of having photographers, you know, and such on board. So it just takes a lot of time and persistence and luck, frankly.
I don't want to imagine what kind of logistical processes you guys had to go through to actually get out there. Speaking of human trafficking, I've noticed that across a large number of the reports which you did, you tend to focus in on a certain person who has been directly affected as part of the overall narrative. Why did you find this was an important thing to narrow in on? I guess my example would be Erlil Andrad, a fisherman who was returned dead to his family after being recruited by traffickers. Would you be able to explain been the reason for focusing on people like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a fellow journalist, you can relate that, you know, often it is important to take big concepts or issues or topics down and make them relatable. People can relate to other people. People have a tougher time relating to demographic, you know, so to talk about seafarers generally doesn't compute on an emotional level. But to hone it in on one emblematic story often works better, you know, and follow, you know, a case study of that one instance of abuse. So we tried to do that as much as possible throughout the story. And Earl Andrade, you know, was an example of, here was a story where we wanted to focus on, we wanted to make the point that it's not just bad cat guys and bad ship. There actually are entire businesses, you know, incorporated businesses that are built up around the process of human trafficking, of recruiting people often on false pretense about what they'll be doing or where they'll be doing it or how much they'll be paid, and getting them sometimes even front load money out of their own pocket to move from place A, you know, in this case it was small villages in the Philippines, to place B, in this instance, Taiwanese tuna longliners running between Cape Town and Montevideo, you know, sort of really brutal, long work. And there are these companies, you know, that specialize in getting the guys who work that job, you know, and finding them and targeting guys who are most likely to be most desperate and least educated and least skeptical and easiest to bamboozle. And so that story that you cite, the Andrade story, was about these companies. They're called Manning Agencies, and one company in particular and one guy in particular who fit the mold. You know, he was recruited and tricked and ultimately ended up dead in a pretty brutal way.
Across your series as well, you sort of discovered a large number of deplorable events which had happened. One of the main ones was the video of men being shot in the middle of the ocean. Would you be able to run us through sort of what happened in the series of events which led to you guys discovering this?
Yeah, so this was a story that I was tipped off to in the form of an email from a source, and the email had a video. And the video, you know, was a 10-minute and 26-second long video that, in essence, was a sort of slow-motion slaughter caught on camera. The video had been found on a cell phone that had been left in a taxi in Fiji, and someone had just happened upon it and scrolled through, saw the video, and handed it over to police. And at root, a whole lot more was known about the video before we began investigating it, other than it was a clear case of murder. It was hard to think of call it anything else. There was no self-defense involved. What you see in the video are, you know, seven guys in the water somewhere. They're sort of clinging. Some of them are clinging to what looks like wreckage of a small wooden boat, overturned, broken up boat. Others are swimming away or toward that wreckage. And someone behind the person who's shooting the camera, who's filming the scene on a cell phone, has a semi-automatic weapon. And one by one, they're shooting the guys in the water. You know, headshots, pretty gruesome, and it takes a while. And the point in investigating and making public the story was, number one, to show the brutality that we'd heard about throughout a year of reporting, but here it was well documented. And number two, to show something even darker, which is the lack of governments, the lack of willingness or power of government to do anything about it. So to this day, even though we were able to figure out roughly when and where those ships were when the incident happened, we even figured out one of the key ships, which probably tells you who the other ships are because they tend to travel in packs. And we identified one of the ships. We found the CEO. We went to his office. We interviewed him, kind of put him on the hot seat. We moved the ball downfield, frankly, quite a bit. And you would think that governments would pick up and say, okay, it's time for us to investigate and hopefully prosecute this. But this is the reality at sea, you know, because these are international waters and they belong to everyone and no one really has responsibility. These ships are kind of very international, and so the victims are from five different countries often, and the crews and the culprit probably as well. And so to the extent that anyone investigates, for example, Fiji looked into it, but they looked into it only so far as to ensure that none of their citizens were either culprits or victims. And the minute they found that, they said, were done here. And that's problematic. You know, no one wants to investigate it for the sake of finding the wrongdoers. They're just investigating to make sure that they're not to blame. That was part of the point of that story, and it was one of the more brutal ones, really.
Have you found that any of your reporting through the series has actually impacted upon legislation or kind of bringing to light the issues that you discovered? Or did, like you just explained, did the government sort of see that none of their people are involved, and so they kind of just brushed it off to the side?
There has been a lot of impact from the stories in various ways. And each story sort of looked at a different type of crime, and so the impacts are distinct to the stories. So, for example, even on the shooting, on the murder at sea, there has been a lot of action, but often it hasn't been from the governments who probably should act. So the Taiwanese government, for example, has been, you know, locked down on it, and so has the Fijian government, and so has the Seychelles. Those are the three governments that should be stepping up. But other governments, after we published it, took a lot of interest, and while they haven't opened investigations, they've worked with NGOs to try to figure out, you know, is there something in general that should be done more systemically to solve this? For example, should there be rules that require seafarers, if they witness or are involved in acts of real violence, if a weapon is discharged, whether you hit the guy or not, whether you were firing in self-defense or not, whatever, if it's discharged, should there be a mandatory reporting requirement to the flag state, and then the flag state collects that data and it's accessible by law enforcement and maybe even the public? You know, these are kind of legitimate systemic questions that were raised and are being discussed. And the sea slavery, too, is the one that really had a lot of impact, specifically in Thailand, U.S. State Department, a bunch of NGOs, some class action lawsuits. Various other pretty intense moves were made to try to confront that problem. And also, don't forget the market, right? So you have large buyers, institutional buyers, Walmart and CP and big grocery store chains. You have insurers, and you have average customers, you and me, who buy stuff and probably don't want to be buying seafood that is tainted by slave labor. But we're hard-pressed to figure out how to do that, you know, and companies know that, and to some degree, the seafood industry is trying to figure out other things they can do to improve their tracking of their own supply chains.
I guess just to diverge slightly as to why you're here in New Zealand at the moment, you're presenting tonight. Would you be able to run us through and how people are able to come and watch this?
So this I may fumble a little bit because I don't have the details on my fingertips. The event is at the Langham Hotel on 6:30 start time. There are a range of different sponsors, including and especially the International Transport Federation, ITF, but others as well. And it's a free and open forum where I think the plan is for me to just show footage and stills from the series and talk about the series for about half an hour, 40 minutes, and then open it up for Q&A.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
That was New York Times journalist Ian Urbina speaking about his work investigating crimes at sea.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.